Welcome to Vita Poetica Journals podcast. We're an online journal featuring creative work explored through a spiritual lens and a publication of the Vita Poetica Arts and Faith Collective. Today on the podcast, we have an interview with poet Wenjuan Lee, and she'll be talking with our assistant interviews editor, Darby Brown.
Today we're going to hear from Wenjuan Lee, who is an Australian-based poet. Wenjuan writes poetry on unceded Wurundjeri land. In her writing, she is interested in gaps, leaks, and spillage, which often takes the form of place, memory, and divinity. Her work has been published in Mingjin Cordite Poetry Review, Going Down Swinging, and others as well. And she was a Wheeler Center Hot Desk Fellow for 2022 and previously served as a poetry editor at VoiceWorks. And this year, she was awarded the Tina Kane Emergent Writer Award for 2023. So congrats on that.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'd love to start by just hearing about your writing journey. When did you first start writing poetry? When did you decide to pursue writing as a career? And how were all of the stops along the way?
Yeah, sure. I guess I was always a reader when I grew up. I think my parents were really big influences in that way. And they're both quite theologically minded. So I guess an answer to also that theological lens, I was introduced to a lot of concepts like grace and salvation and C.S. Lewis from a young age. When I actually started writing, though, was at university, and I wanted to be actually a fiction writer. I wanted to do short stories. But I got this job over the summer helping out a supervisor looking at specifically New Zealand poetry. And I think it was there that I realized that it was poetry all along, and that what I was trying to do in fiction was actually just poetry in its wholeness. I wanted to capture in a very specific image or a very specific feeling and a specific line. And all of the stuff that I was doing in short stories was just for that one line. So I didn't care about the beginning. I didn't care about the end. I just cared about that little bit. And immersing myself in a lot of New Zealand poets and kind of helped, I guess, contemporary writers as well. So I began to kind of think, I guess, more poetically. I think beforehand, I thought that it had to rhyme or that it had to have very formal structures. But after that kind of job, I realized that I did want to do poetry. And then when I moved to Melbourne, I think I took it much more seriously, because when I graduated, I think there's this kind of tension where you're like, oh, I've done my bachelor's of arts and now I'm going to try and get a real job or whatever it is, and I can't be an artist. But I found it actually really difficult to try and sustain my practice while I was trying to do writing after hours, so I kind of made a very clear decision that I had to work part-time, which I just have the privilege of having a very good job that supports my income and also having opportunities that have now supported my writing, I guess. So I think VoiceWorks, which was, it's like a literary journal for emerging writers up to 25, that really helped me, because I guess it introduced me to this community of everyone who was like-minded and who knew the most emerging poets, and just reading a lot of submissions, realizing everyone, I guess, in Melbourne is submitting and different things like that. So I got very acquainted with a lot of, I guess, Australian lit. And then through that, I became much more versed in also other Australian literary journals. And then from there, you kind of build up, I guess, different relationships with different editors. I think there was a period after VoiceWorks where I was just writing a lot, submitting here and there, and then I guess getting to a place where I could do some of the things that I wanted and have more agency. And now I'm working on my debut poetry collection.
Oh, exciting. Thank you.
There weren't that many jumps. I think it's mainly just trying to just like know as many kind of journals and acquaint yourself with the ones that you like.
Yeah, it's good advice. So kind of going off of that, what influences do you have in your writing? You mentioned the New Zealand poets and some contemporary ones as well. I'd just love to hear about that.
It really kind of is just like in writing world, I guess. Usually it's really weird. I feel like I am kind of quite influenced by a lot of canonical writers, you know, like, and actually a lot of American writers, like Annie Dillard is a huge influence. I think the way that she, yeah, I think she writes poetically for sure, and her kind of attention to nature. I think I'm interested in a lot of philosophers. Like I really like Iris Murdoch, and some of her ideas around attention and love. Theologically, yeah, like C.S. Lewis, I think he's an incredible apologetic. Is that an apologetic?
Yeah.
Apologist. I think he's incredible. Like, again, I think it's the way that he has these kind of turns of phrases, like Mere Christianity, I really love. What's the other one called? The one where he talks about his, he's grieving his wife. So yeah, writers like Simone Weil, Gravity and Grace, Waiting on God. These are all like very, like, let's say, cryptic, but also like little glimmers of truth. And then fiction writers, Siri Hustvedt. I really like her short stories. I also like the way that she co-opts or like uses a lot of art, fine arts, and in Australian writers, I really like John Forbes. He's a poet. He's really interested in kind of like concrete, kind of banal street images. And his one of his influences was Gerald Manley Hopkins, who's, yeah, like quite well known. And who else? I feel like it really depends on the day. Sometimes, you know, you have ideas that you're obsessed with, and then you have particular writers that speak to that. But I feel like the people that I do tend to return to is Annie Dillard and often C.S. Lewis. And I've also recently gotten into a lot more of Malaysian poets who have either immigrated and then kind of had to kind of work within the canon. So people like Wong Mei or Shirley Lim.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you. That's a really good list. I'm going to check out a few of those. So similarly, what themes or concepts do you tend to explore in your poetry? Like you were saying, of it kind of depends on the day, but do you notice any images or topics or things that you continue to obsess over and have to explore?
I think it, yeah, again, it does depend on the day, but I do feel like there's also been like a weird progression around time. Like I feel like in the beginning, I was really obsessed with like mouths and anything to do with like the lips, speaking, silence, that kind of thing. But I feel like something that kind of carries out all of the kind of underpinning it or is there is kind of present in some way is light often, light and water. I think, yeah, like I think the way that light moves and also like what it implies in terms of illumination and darkness, and similarly what water does, often carrying memory or moving or like being both something that is like, yeah, like subtle but also can like eradicate and erase things. Yeah, and I think often people have talked about water in terms of like the diaspora, I guess, because it's something that is kind of leaky and doesn't really have a form, which you know, some people who are part of that would say is very similar to, I guess, displacement or exile.
Yeah, kind of going off of that, you mentioned that briefly, but I really liked in your bio saying that you were interested in gaps, leaks, and spillages. Would you want to expand briefly on that?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, no. Yeah, I think it's like the gaps in speech often that I'm interested in, but also I guess the gaps in space or intention. Like I think the thing that maybe we can all kind of connect with is that idea that whatever you are saying cannot fully be understood or digested to the person that is receiving it, but yet we still try and we still have that attempt of connection. But there will also be things that we don't say, which is just as important. And then it's like, what is that kind of duality of the things that we do try to communicate, and then the things that we do hold close to us, and then the things that unconsciously or subconsciously slip without us knowing. Which is interesting, because I think one of the things that I have been obsessed with recently, at least, or interested in, is psychoanalysis, because I think that's often the way in which people are often thinking about, like, oh, how are the things that you say versus the things that you do, like contradictions, or like little ways in which things contradict each other to kind of speak of a greater truth. And often the way that people present their truth is not necessarily what is true. I think that's the gaps. And then I think leaking and spillage is very similar, where it's often something that we are trying to control. We obviously have a particular thing that we want to control, and leaks and spillages are things that are either betrayed, they're not things that we actually want to be spilled, but they come out eventually.
Yeah, thank you, that's so profound. I loved the image of nothing can be fully translated to another person, but we still try, and kind of what makes human connection beautiful. So I am going to shift gears slightly, because I do want to hear about your thoughts on the intersection of faith and creativity. You mentioned earlier that your parents are very theological and you grew up in that environment. How do you feel like that aspect has influenced your poetry, or just influenced you as a person in general?
Let me see. I think they are very, it's hard. I think they are people who really love, like, they pay attention to very small things, and everything matters in that way. My mom herself, you know, and my dad, both of them are creative in different ways, and they are very playful about that, I think. Like, and they have this sense that there is always room for you to try and express yourself, and that expressing yourself is earnest, or like has meaning. So, you know, the way that my dad loves gardening, and you know, the way that he like will have this particular, like, I think discipline, I guess, to do that even if he doesn't want to. And my mom, she loves like doing a lot of flower pressing. So I guess it's a kind of, I would say, a way of being that feels like geared towards everything can be precious, which means that even, especially with reading as well, that that should kind of reflect that, I guess. Like, I think I am interested, and I do love, obviously, like things like irony, but I think that underneath it, there must be this kind of understanding that things are important, I guess. Yeah. Things are important. And how that influenced my poetry or my creativity, I think, is probably it has. Like, I don't think it was an aspect of it. I think it just did. I think I'm a very holistic person, or I do think I'm very precise about just how I live and also how I write because of that. Like with even things like reading, I think it was very important why I liked something, and not necessarily to do with form or things that were like academic or because they're part of the zeitgeist, but in terms of how they made you feel. And that's the same with, I think, with cinema and with fine arts. I think there's been a similar quality of, there are particular narratives that I think my parents like, and that's often something to do with something like I don't know, something surprising, I guess, about the human condition, or to do with relationships, and like, even, I don't know, I think like a lot. So there's this one book that my dad introduced me to, maybe around high school, which was by this person called Timothy Radcliffe, who is, I think, a monk at Blackfriars, and the book is called What is the Point of Being a Christian? And in it, he kind of, it is kind of like a bit of a, it's a bit of a cliche title, but it's really beautiful. And he brings in, I guess, like a lot of theologians do, they always bring in a lot of writers and poets. And I think that that's an interesting thing, that obviously there is something about poetry that specifically talks to truthfulness in ways that we just can't do with normal communication. And I think that that's why even the way poets talk about their poetry, it can feel so metaphysical and sacred, you know? I think that's what it is. Yeah, so everything feels sacred. And I think my parents definitely imbued a sense of sacredness, or at least reverence, with everything that we do.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Everything I write about has a level of, like, why am I, like, often it's things that I've been paying attention to and I circle to, and then I realize, oh, like, the only way that I can process it is often through poetry. Like, it's very interesting, because I remember saying that I had this, I felt compelled to write, and sometimes I feel like it's really, I feel itchy if I don't or whatever. And I was talking to my dad about it, and he said, that's kind of how I feel with prayer, which I thought was interesting, because I think that's like, so I think it is interesting that there's like this, obviously you have to be compelled to it, and I think they're probably of the same, they're doing the same thing.
Yeah. No, that's really interesting. So do you feel like poetry helps you to connect with spirituality and with God?
Oh, it's such a hard one.
Yeah.
I think in some ways it does, but it's also really hard when you, I think, you begin to think that you have an audience in mind. Mm-hmm. And then there's something that kind of comes down, and there's some sort of barrier. And I was talking to my friend about this, and she said the problem is you're trying to talk about God, you're not talking to God. Like, obviously, like, there's a huge esteem where all of his confessions are to God. So I think in some ways it's helped me to maybe articulate some of my ideas better, or to process my emotions. But it's always been a really blurry line if it's actually connected me to God. Like, I think it might be something that happens after, or because I wonder if maybe I've thought about that, like, if there will come a point where language will fail, and I do actually, I like the ways in which to connect with God and to presence and all of that has to be without my writing. But it's so hard, because I guess part of it is that the way I interact and process the world is through poetry.
Mm-hmm.
So it does make me feel closer to the world in some ways, but there's also an element that maybe as soon as it becomes something that you feel is a product, then I don't know, then something happens and it doesn't feel true anymore. I don't know.
No, I mean, that all makes so much sense. Yeah, I feel like I also relate to a lot of what you're saying. Yeah, it's so interesting. So I guess, more generally speaking, how do you feel spirituality and creativity influence each other? And like, what do you feel like happens at that intersection between the two?
I guess at the intersection of spirituality and creativity is something that is often spontaneous, something act of love, and something that has to do with creation. So this is a really beautiful thing that I think V.H. Vanstone said, and it's what, and he talks about this idea of how, it's a really long anecdote. I hope that's okay.
No, go for it. I'm gonna hear it.
So there were like these schoolboys, and he was like he's a priest. He was a priest at a church, and there were these schoolboys who didn't have anything to do, and so he gave them this kind of holiday task, and the whole task was to create this kind of like diorama of a particular, like just a diorama of the nearby stream or something like that. And so at the beginning, you know, he just did that because he wanted them to just like to kind of actually entertain them and to keep them occupied pretty much. But he saw them every day, and at the beginning it was just like little bits of twigs, little bits of like dry leaves, all of that. And he was like, okay, yeah, cool, like they're occupied. But then as time went on, he noticed that it began to like really grow in terms of like both appreciation and in terms of like time. Like lots of more of the boys would be spending time with it, and there was way more value, and he would start to look at it and appreciate it. And he could see that it was like this real work of like love. And he kind of talks about that sense of it began to be something that was really meaningful because they put more time with it and they put more attention with it. That he said that was kind of almost like us and our, and just like trying to liken it, I think, to God and our, the way that we also kind of create things. And that's an innately a human thing, is to want to create little things that mean something. And so I think that's probably when I read that, I was like, this is what it is. That's that intersection of both, you spend more time with it, and in that spending time, you give it meaning and value, and it grows as well. Like, I don't think it's a static thing. I don't think the work is just something that you put time on and then it just stays there. I think the work obviously changes you, and it's this kind of reciprocal relationship. So I think that both of them, like both, I think the intersection, like where they meet, is that sharing space and and also like respecting that thing, that it can also be spontaneous and that it can take its own course, because I do think that that's what writing does. You will go in with an idea, but you often do not follow the idea, and if anything, the idea follows you or like changes you, and then
it drags you somewhere else.
Exactly, drags you to a different room, and you're like, okay, don't like this. Or and that's probably the same with any, I think, spirituality in general, is you think it's one thing, but you actually realize it's another thing, and it's a constant, it's like an ongoing thing that you have to constantly like go back to, like and work at, or not even work at, but like, yeah, constantly be shaped by, and then it shapes you, and
oh, that's interesting. Have there been any challenges with being a spiritual person and a writer?
Absolutely. I think it's probably been, I feel like I've actually, it's weird, I think I kept it really separate at the beginning, where I don't think people knew that I was probably spiritual, in writing circles, and people like at my church didn't know I was a writer, or probably didn't value it. And it's only been, I guess, relatively recently that I realized like that, of course, like I think maybe in the past the subjects of my work were probably opaque enough, like light or water, that they can be relatively like, and poets always have that kind of assumed like, oh, like they're all airy fairy, like metaphysical, whatever. There's this like level of like leeway, but I think when you start to name it really explicitly, say if you have like some sort of poem that's in response to a religious iconography or something, then that's when it starts to, you're being a bit more upfront. And I think it's only been recently that I've done that, but it's really interesting because they should really be complementary, I think, arts and spirituality. I think both are really, like, really, really big on feelings and how we feel and being truthful about it, and not and not having to kind of pander or to hide or to have some sort of like, I think it's always, both of them are very unconventional in some ways because it's not necessarily to do with the status quo or like capitalism or whatever it is. It's like remaining true to what you believe. But weirdly, I think they obviously have been associated with very different, I would say, political ideology, whatever it is. So having, I think it was definitely actually more in art writing circles that there would be more, there would be some surprise that I was just. And I think it's only been recently that, writing has actually been a really good way of bringing things like whether it is a religious painting or an idea that I think is relative, is quite Christian in nature into something that's maybe like neutral, I don't know, rather than me just talking about it.
Switching gears a little bit to more like practical questions, could you share a bit more about your writing process? How do you start writing a poem? How many drafts do you tend to write? And the hard question, how do you know when a piece is done and ready to be published?
Okay. How do I write? Often it is like, it really depends. So I've realized like there's probably two poems that exist in my world where there's the poem that's like essentially written in one go and how it's written stays the same. Like, I don't think there's any, there's no draft. It is what it is.
Yeah.
And that is often being in a particular state of mind and receptiveness or porousness that I just cannot plan. I think usually it's often I've like those ones, those poems that I've written like that, it has been this kind of almost like a revelation, or it's been like an overwhelming sense of stimuli that I need to process it. And I've read a lot. I've read enough that the words just kind of flow in a way that I can't change it. Like, and I think to change it would be to change my voice. So those are the poems that I really, really like, because I know it's finished because I did it in one kind of, like, I just like, I almost just like vomited it out and it's just like perfect. And I'm like, okay, thank you. But those are really rare. While I think most often the other poem, the other side of the poem is the one that's like, I'll have a seed of an idea, or usually it will be a line. So a line will come to me and then I build around that usually. And so it's either responding to a line that I really like, that probably I want to explore what it means. So I might not even know what the line means, but I want to kind of like work around it, or it'll be responding like to either a painting or a film. So I think those have been, and then I'll kind of chip away at it, and voice usually stays the same, but just like moving the different words around.
Yeah.
Or like, what does it even mean? Usually I'm like, what does this even mean? And I think that's when it's finished, because real sense of like affirmation, and I just feel like there's an affirmation when it comes to the ones that I just like, this comes out of me and there's nothing to do about it. While the one that is like, you chip away at and you like are doing editing while you're writing it, those are the ones that I find much more difficult, because you can just keep on editing and whittling away. And it just becomes not a, it just, it doesn't become anything. And you're just like, these are just words on a page that like, and I've eradicated all sense of identity or like, in the poem. So I think it is a matter of remembering the passion. So I, what I've tried to do with those ones, and usually those ones are much more conceptual, while I think the ones that are processy are much more feeling based. So usually, those ones that have like ridiculous numbers of drafts, it's because it's often to do with something that is like religiously or like philosophically technical, and I don't really know how to get at it, or I feel dissatisfied with my answer of the poem, like my poem's answer. And the times that I have felt like it's complete, I mean, have, it's really hard to plan. I think usually it might be just, I usually will have to dedicate a lot of time to that poem. So I can't really like spread my attention on multiple poems. It's like, oh, no, I really complete this one poem and I'll like chip away at it every day or something until it feels like, I guess I feel satisfied with the answer.
Yeah.
Or otherwise, usually it might be like, oh, this needs to go. Like this is no longer a poem.
Yeah. Kind of going off of that, do you have moments where you feel discouraged with writing or even go through writer's block? And if so, how do you get through that? How do you push through to the other side?
Yeah, I definitely have moments of feeling discouraged. I think it's usually when I read, but then it's actually a kind of a blessing as well, is I'll read people, like I'll read poets that have essentially said the thing that I've wanted to say.
Oh,
and I go,
yes.
Done it. So like my job is done. Like I don't need to, like that feeling that you've somehow conveyed to me is like perfect and fully formed. But then, it's not really discouraged. I think that's just more like, awe and being like, okay, there's nothing for me to add or something. But the other times I felt discouraged is definitely when I look at a poem that I've like worked at, and there'll be, the weirdest thing is there'll be days where I'm like, that's a fine poem, it's fine. But I still don't have that strong, like, yes. And then the next day I'll look at it and I'm like, no, this is a garbage poem. This is absolute garbage. But I think the way to overcome it is honestly to step away from it, I think. And like, I'll go for a walk, or I'll engage in another form of like art. And that usually sometimes will, like, there'll be something that happens, whether I'm hanging out with a friend or watching a film, where the answer will come to me, I feel like.
Yeah.
Usually you'll be able to somehow find that answer and then you bring it back to your poem and you try again, I guess.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. So I want to hear a bit about what projects you're working on right now or that you've just finished recently. I remember you saying at the start that you're working on a debut collection. So would love to hear about that.
Yeah, sure. So that was actually something that pretty much began when I was doing my hot desk fellowship at the Wheeler Center, where there was kind of a point where I thought, oh, most of the poems have been speaking about the same thing, just in different iterations or through different lens. So I must as well keep going with that. And they're kind of poems to do with, I would say, desire and divinity, really, and kind of me trying to grapple with both. I guess like I have a very specific relationship with, like as everyone does, with love, and what does love mean when you are also someone who, like, I think has these different concepts and ideas around God and you know, like eros versus something like agape. So that's kind of the poems that I'm working on. And also I feel like place is a really big part of it. I feel like place is always a setting in which that divine thing happens and also that erotic thing happens. It's kind of been an interesting process because of the very fact that I am someone who likes the feeling of the like, you just completely have the thing, the poem out, and you create it. But this is actually like, that's like not sustainable, and the actual is, and it's, I've just got poems that I just need to like whittle away ultimately.
Just two more questions. First, do you have a favorite project or a piece that you feel most proud of that you worked on in the past? Maybe one or two. I feel like it's probably hard to pick one.
Yeah, I think it's, oh, that's so difficult. I actually think I have been really enjoying the project. I think the project, but not the product. The
Okay.
project I really liked.
It's the journey, not the destination.
Yeah, absolutely. Was the, like, there was one that I had to write in response to woodcuts that were in this, like, the University of Melbourne. They have, like, a library, an art library, and it's, there were sometimes the exhibitions on in there. And the exhibition on at that time was to do with woodcuts from Dante's Inferno. So there was Bruegel and William Blake, etc. And I just had to write a response to that. And I loved that because it was probably the way that I was first introduced to, like, poetry responding to art, which I really liked. And then maybe more recently, more recently, it was there's the Australian Queer Archives in Melbourne. So it houses a lot of material from, I think, I don't know, but it's just like this big repository. And I found a lot of interesting letters from a kind of gay Catholic community group. So these letters were beautiful and were honestly like poetry, really. And I wrote an essay about them.
Oh yeah, that's so cool.
I think anything that's like archival feels like it's less about me, which I think is kind of interesting because you're using the material rather than sometimes you're like, it doesn't have to be yourself, but obviously yourself is embedded in it.
No, and I think there's something about responding to to art or music or just something like another text, that it just immediately gives you something to grasp and the writing can flow from there. Yeah, it's really, really cool. So finally, do you have any advice for other creatives who also have a faith or spiritual practice, or just advice for anyone wanting to pursue poetry?
I guess probably what I should also be aware of myself. So it's advice for like people who are trying and also feel like I'm part of that group.
Yeah.
Is maybe to remain like very, I think, and it's hard to, like, it's easy to say, but I think it's actually hard to grasp, is like to somehow always stay very close to what you know and want, rather than writing something that you perceive is like highbrow or literary or part of the zeitgeist, because I think that is definitely the way in which I have, like, I think there is sometimes a bit of a pressure to write like that in order for there to be recognition. And then it comes from a very, like, it comes from external validation, I guess, and it doesn't ever feel like something that you can be proud of. So I would probably say to somehow remain close to what feels urgent to you.
That's really good advice. So thank you so much for letting me interview you. I really enjoyed just hearing about your writing and your wisdom and just your thoughts on all of these different heavy subjects.
That was poet Wendren Lee speaking with our assistant interviews editor, Darby Brown. You can learn more about Vita Poetica at the website in our podcast description, www.vitapoetica.org, where you can find details on how to submit to the journal and other ways to get involved. Thanks for listening, and more soon.